This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And once again, so good to be with you as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Today, big emphasis on nuclear power and the summit that went on a few weeks back that was attended by Barack Obama and a lot of over 50 heads of state. We've got one of the organizers of that conference is going to be with us here in just a minute. And of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half hour, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Remind those of you listening on radio that this program can also be heard commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Our first guest that's coming up is an extremely important person in world security, somebody you're going to want to really pay attention to and listen. He's got some fascinating things and insights over the summit that just took place in The Hague and before that in Amsterdam. Right now, I want to introduce you to Enno Kaiser. He's the head of group security at Urenco, one of the major suppliers of enriched uranium of peaceful purposes, about 150 power plants around the world. In the United States, the UK, Germany, and the Netherlands. Welcome to the program, Enno.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, Enno, we watched with great interest as President Obama and the heads of state all met at the Nuclear Security Summit in The Hague a couple of weeks back. And you, as a matter of fact, had a summit of your own just before then, of which you were chairman. And then, of course, your organization supported and helped put together the summit where President Obama and the other heads of state visited. Can you give us an expert view from right there at the scene?
Well, the nuclear security summit that we had was a 2.5 days event which we held as nuclear industry in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam gathered about 200 CEOs of nuclear companies to discuss further progress in nuclear security. And the Nuclear Industry Summit that we organize is a supporting event for the Nuclear Security Summit, which was held also in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, but in another city, The Hague. And that is the summit for the governments, and as a matter of fact, the initiative of the series of summits was taken by President Obama.
All right, now heads of state, I think, attend that nuclear security summit. Is it just the G7 or the G8 or even what it is even is anymore? I'm not sure.
it's getting bigger and bigger, I think. The number of countries participating in the summit process, and I'm talking about the nuclear security summit then, the governmental summit, mm-hmm. is 53 countries. So it's much, much bigger than the three G8 meetings.
All right. So how many did you say? Did you say 53 countries?
To give you some numbers on that event, it's 53 countries, so 53 heads of state. But if you take the delegates into account, it's 5,000 delegates. And for instance, if you look at the coverage by press, some 3,000 journalists are covering that event. But probably I should point out that is the main event, the governmental event. And the event that we are organizing, the NIS, the Nuclear Industry Summit, is focused on the industries, and that is a little bit more modest. We have about 30 countries in our event, and some 200 CEOs of nuclear industries worldwide.
Wow, and the main purpose of this is to be sure that the nuclear material is safeguarded from terrorist activities. Is that the main reason for these summits?
Yeah, the whole idea of the summit process came from President Obama, who in 2009 gave a speech on that specific concern, and we should take into account, I think, that, of course, the attack on the Twin Towers raised questions about what the next step for terrorists would be to superpass that event. But also we should take into account that at that time, after the collapse of the former Soviet Union, the control of material in the Eastern Europe was perhaps not as rigid as it had been, and the combination of that those two events raised questions about nuclear terrorism, and I talk then about let's say 2009. Since then, of course, a lot of activities were undertaken. We have had already two nuclear industry summits and nuclear security summits in 2010 and 2012 in Washington and in Seoul in South Korea. So there has already been done a lot of work, and we have absolutely improved the security posture since then.
Now, I understand a lot of the nuclear material since the end of the Cold War has been used pretty much for fuel for these nuclear power plants. But now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're now going to be entering a period of time when we're going to be using the old decommissioned bombs, the plutonium, which really is dangerous, and that's a tougher thing to handle, I think. Can you give us some insights there?
I think that one of the main targets or main aims that the summit process has is to reduce the amount of nuclear material that is of potential interest to terrorists. So high enriched uranium and plutonium, the less we cut from that, the better it is. So using, for instance, plutonium as fuel in nuclear power plants, as MOX fuel, is, I think, one of the very good developments. It's not necessarily a security development, but nevertheless, it reduces the amount of sensitive material that is around.
I would say so, yes. It sounds like a wonderful program to have. And in fact, a lot of us thought that it was already going on because we knew that we were using nuclear material from Russia since the breakup of the Soviet Union. And I'd kind of thought that we were already using that plutonium, but then it had been advised that no, that it's too tricky to handle and too tough for security. Are you running into security challenges with this material?
Well, we must say that if you look at the nuclear field, we should keep in mind that there's a very broad distinction between, let's say, things from the weapons domain and things from the civil domain, and let's say the use of weapon grade material, either high enriched uranium or plutonium that was made to use in weapons, is something that is perhaps on the agenda of the nuclear security summit, the governmental summit, but as industry we are not involved in that specific area. As Urenco, for instance, we don't produce high enriched uranium, we produce only slight enriched uranium for the use in power plants.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that's the case. But, of course, as head of security, then you're not only conducting the Nuclear Industry Summit, but also supporting the Nuclear Security Summit. We were hoping that maybe you could give us some newsy insights as to some of the challenges and the problems that you face. Are you you obviously have to worry about physically guarding the material with armed guards, and what about threats from the SCADA operations, like what happened with Iran and the Stuxnet worm?
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that really are different in this summit in the Netherlands compared to the previous ones is that there's much more focus on the cyber domain and assessment of the threat there. For instance, the Stuxnet malware is something that you need to think about how to defeat that. But also, there's focus on things that that people can do to improve their security posture further. And that's, for instance, more collaboration between the industries, sharing their experience, both in what they see on their firewalls, for instance, coming at them, but also, for instance, in how you come to a good security architecture. And that can be both for physical as for cybersecurity. And normally in security, I'm well aware that you will appreciate that we don't share really the details, certainly not in a radio broadcast. But the principles, I think, can be quite well discussed. And things like, for instance, compartmentalizing, creating defense in depth, not be dependent on one security measure, is typically one of the things that you will see if you look at high secure facilities like nuclear facilities are. They are hard targets, well protected, because, for instance, you will see a lot of layering, a lot of defense in depth there.
Okay, layering in the defense. In other words, you would be talking about different obstacles that a terrorist would have to get around, and then there would be another obstacle, and then another obstacle after that. We're talking about physical obstacle. I know you don't want to get into this too deeply, and I don't expect you to tell me things that are too sensitive, and I don't even want to air things that are too sensitive. But can you give us kind of an idea of how that structure works, and so that we can rest easy?
Well, I think that you gave already a quite good description of if you were to attack something and you conquer the first obstacle, you need to run into a next obstacle, and that's a situation that you will see if you look at the nuclear power plant from the outside. You will see the outer fence, and subsequently you will see the guards, the cameras, the structure of the buildings, and if you would go into the buildings, you would see a lot of defense in depth there as well. And if you look to the cyber domain, I think it's there quite similar. You can imagine that you have different types of networks positioned after each other, so that, for instance, on the outer boundary of the company, you have the company network with internet access, for instance, and a lot of layers further, you have the SCADA system, where you really want to be sure that nobody from the outside is able to get to that.
And, of course, very fresh in our minds is Fukushima, and what happened with the tidal wave and then the flooding and that sort of thing. I presume that that is not under your purview because you're in security, and that really has probably little to do with you, and I don't suppose that you can comment on that, but of course if you wish, I'd like to hear what you have to say. But the other question would be, is supposing a tsunami came from the air. I mean, we see airplanes hijacked. We saw it with devastating effect here in the United States. There recently was a missing plane in Malaysia. What if one of these big 777s comes crashing down into a nuclear power plant? Will that give us the same effect that we had with the tsunami in Fukushima?
I think Fukushima, you already hinted that I perhaps I'm not the right person to comment on safety issues, because I am not from safety, I'm from security. But I think still there is an important lesson there that we could draw and also use within the security field, and that is you really have to have an international view on this, and you have to have international standards, and it would be good to also have some kind of international peer reviews, so that we know from each other where we are and what levels of safety, or in my case, security, we have. And as a matter of fact, we have already in a number of countries a system like that in place. The IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna, in Austria, is delivering a service to countries that request that service. And that service is an international advisory service. That means that you get a group of nuclear security experts visiting your country, visiting your regulator, visiting the different nuclear facilities that country has, and advises on the security level that country has. And that's, I think, a very important thing to ensure that lessons, the good practices that we have in one country are also known and used in other countries, and that is, I think, something that we should do more in the security field.
Standardization of security across borders, I think, is what you just described to us, and I wonder, are there dangers there in sharing, let's say, Italy's security measures with, let's say, Russia, who recently has shown some adventurism and other organizations or places that have nuclear power. Isn't there a chance of sharing this stuff, that you're also leaving yourself open to breaches of that security?
Well, it's to give you a philosophical answer, it's always, of course, important to think about who your friends and who your enemies are. But I think in this case, in this field of duty, it's the terrorists that we need to be concerned about, and the industry, for instance, the nuclear industry needs to work together to combat that threat. But I do agree there's absolutely a country specific part to nuclear security. And we tend as security people to share as little as possible. But I think the whole summit process is aimed also at changing that a little bit, which does not mean that we would share any and all and any detailed information that we have. But we need to find a way to learn from each other's experience and get stronger over the country borders.
And of course, that's what these summits are all about. Now, tell me about we missed this one, but we want to certainly give a lot of publicity to the next one. So, when is the next NIS 2015 and the next NSS for the heads of state?
Well, the next NSS and NIS will both be held in 2016, and both be held in the United States. I currently do not know exactly which city or cities will host that venue, but it surely will be in the United States, and that I think is very nice because, as I mentioned earlier, President Obama initiated this process, and I think with the fourth summit, we probably will come to a close. We have made a lot of progress. And I think it's nice that that conclusion can be drawn in the United States.
Okay, so 2016, it's coming back to the United States. That's interesting to know. And other than that, we don't have a whole lot more details. But I presume your staff will keep me posted. Send me a notice or a press release or something so that we can keep track of it and maybe come back again and visit to what's going on. Now, I'd like to ask you if you wouldn't mind, Anno, to kind of put on the thinking cap for just a minute. Look down the road, maybe 5 years, 10 years. What do you see into the future? You're a young man, but you're highly experienced, and you certainly have got a feel for what's going to go on 10 and 20 years from now. What do you see?
Well, what I see for the future is, if I look at nuclear power as a way to generate electricity that we all need without producing carbon gas, and if I look at, for instance, not only electricity production, but also look at the, let's say, the hospitals, where you need nuclear technology, for instance, to do analysis and treat and cure people and patients. I think there's really a place for nuclear power, and I hope that what we do in the summit process, try to be open about that and talk about that and share our commitment and the plans that we have and the achievements that we made with the public, will help creating sufficient trust in the community to accept nuclear power as an option for the future.
All right, Anno, that's an interesting picture. We caught you in Amsterdam, I believe. Is that your I thought your office was in the UK, but you're in Amsterdam. Where are you?
As a matter of fact, I was born in Amsterdam, but that's not perhaps that relevant for this conversation. But nevertheless, I was born in Amsterdam, so I'm a Dutchman. But the company I work for, Urenco, is active in a number of countries, and as a matter of fact, the head office is in Stokepoortjes. And I am responsible for security at head office. So my desk, if I may formulate it, so my workplace is in Stokepoortjes near London in England. But my home is in the Netherlands. So I try to spend time in both countries.
All right. Well done. Absolutely.
A few things come to mind. I think that one thing that I would like to say here is that we absolutely should not take no for an answer. Perhaps in the context of this discussion, have people that say, I'm not going to share information about security because it's country specific and I don't want to share that with other people. I think we should not accept that. I think it's much, much better to overcome that barrier and share information. And so not taking no for an answer is, I think, very important. And another word of wisdom, and I experienced that again when I organized the NIS, it is absolutely imperative that we do things together. There's things like this cannot be organized by one person. I was lucky enough to be asked to be the chair of the NIS organizing committee, but there are many, many people who contributed enormously to organizing this event. And seeking that collaboration with other people is, I think, paramount if you want to be successful and happy in life.
Anno Kaiser, head of group security at Urenco. You've been so generous with your time, and we really, really appreciate so much you being on the program today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. It was absolutely my pleasure.
Okay, we got a break for the half hour, but please stick around because we're coming right back and we're going to have featured a report recorded live from the floor of the Green Technology Conference that just went on in Corpus Christi, Texas. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, We're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
William Somerset Maugham. For art, if it is to be reckoned as one of the great values of life, must teach men humility, tolerance, wisdom,